Hey there, Off the Grid listener. Let's take a moment to dream a little dream together. What if you didn't need to be perfect? You didn't need to start over. You didn't need to be small and quiet so you never caused harm. And you didn't need to do it alone or just try harder. What if instead you could get support at a nervous system level to weather whatever happens in your business? And you could learn trauma-informed best practices for your work that end cycles of freezing, fawning, or people-pleasing. What if you could be held in deep care as you practice honoring your boundaries and amending and accounting for inevitable harm? If any of these dreams are resonating, I want to invite you to join Foundations, a hybrid training container to strengthen your trauma-informed care and business practices, taught by podcast sponsor and somatic trauma-informed practitioner, Jess Jackson. Foundations gathers May 17th through 19th with live trainings and a virtual portal with an actionable curriculum. Learn more and save your spot at the link in the show notes. Welcome to Off the Grid, a podcast for small business owners who want to leave social media without losing all their clients.
Let's go off the grid.
Okay.
Let's go. Off the grid.
Okay.
I know that you really want to put your phone away.
Yeah.
Let's go off the grid.
Hello and welcome to Off the Grid, a podcast about leaving social media without losing all your clients. I'm your host, Amelia Fruby. I am the founder of Softer Sounds Podcast Studio. And here on this show, I'm your fellow traveler and guide on our journey of doing business with radical generosity and energetic sovereignty. If you're new to this podcast, welcome. I am so glad you're here. Please make sure that you head to the show notes and grab the free Leaving Social Media Toolkit. It includes three great tools that pair with the first few episodes of the show, and it's a great place to dive in. So again, you can find that at offthegrid.fun/toolkit, or just click the link in the show notes. There's so much for you to explore. And if you're a longtime listener, welcome back. I am so happy to be here with you over halfway through season three of the show. We've had so many amazing conversations this season, and today is no exception. So today on the podcast, I'm really excited to be joined by Jess Jackson of Soft Path Healing. Jess is a licensed massage therapist, somatic and safe and sound protocol practitioner, and trauma-informed educator and mentor for healers. They draw from their lived experience as a survivor with extensive trauma-informed studies. And Jess is a forever student of the nervous system, neuroscience, healing justice, and somatic practice. Welcome, Jess. I'm so happy to have you here on Off the Grid.
I'm so glad to be here. Two softies in business.
Yes, both of our businesses have the word soft in the name, and it feels like a kinship.
It really does.
So today's episode is all about trauma-informed business, which is one of your specialties and something that you teach and support business owners in. So I want to take us right into this concept because trauma-informed is so meaningful. And it is also a bit of a buzzword at times. What does trauma-informed business mean to you and in your work?
I think trauma-informed business, it's like really, really expansive. And there's a lot of softness because it has to be adaptable to the business, to the client, to your customers, to your model, and to the world. I think lately for me, a lot of my pals in business are really struggling right now, especially online business, especially in healing. And so I think an axis that feels really like alive and potent for me right now is that trauma-informed business is antithetical to capitalism, and yet business exists within capitalism. And so not that it's impossible to be trauma-informed, but I feel like to do it, we're always at odds with a system that makes it really difficult. And I think that framework can be really helpful. Like, no wonder it feels hard. It is hard. So I know that's general, but I feel like for me, that's like a generous and generative way to think about it. For a lot of us who are grappling with what is it and how do I do it, I think capitalism and, you know, bro marketing like makes that even harder. So that's where I would start.
I think that's really interesting that you're pointing us to the fact that one of the reasons it's really tricky or slippery to talk about trauma-informed business is because there is this inherent tension between being trauma-informed and being in business and late-stage capitalism. So when we combine those two things together, we're trying to use, to some degree, a nervous system support and regulation framework to heal something that then is always activating and challenging our nervous system. And like, that sounds really hard.
And I think especially like, yeah, it's a buzzword and it's meaningful. And I think the ways in which trauma-informed care is on the rise and often being co-opted or like using as lip service can also make it feel more meaningless than meaningful. Even in this piece of like, what does trauma-informed mean? It's not just about trauma.
I'd love to take a step back then, because I don't want to presume that everyone listening to this conversation knows necessarily like what trauma is or what trauma-informed care is. So could you take us back to the basics for a minute and just kind of define those terms and how you're using them?
I'm so glad you asked that. I think this will be really helpful. And this is actually how I approach what trauma-informed care and what trauma-informed business is, looking at what is a traumatic experience. And yes, anyone who's been through or is going through something traumatic gets to define that. And there is a lot of material that we can draw from, like not just trusting our clients and trusting someone's lived experience, but part of what I love to offer folks is a bit of a framework and a blueprint of what a trauma-informed experience could mean for someone and how that could show up. And from that place, we can kind of flip it and reverse it to figure out like how to be trauma-informed is really the antidote of a traumatic experience. So for me to rewind a little, a traumatic experience often is a time where we are not in control. We are not in our agency. We are not in power in the situation. And often things happen really quickly and without our consent. Traumatic experiences are often really overwhelming. And there can be a quickness. It's not that it's always a fast experience, but in the nervous system, there can be a quickness in that we know that we're under threat or that we're not safe, and the nervous system is going to pick the best option to respond. So I think one of the signature kind of flavors of a traumatic experience is that we are making these choiceless choices from the nervous system, which I say without judgment, the nervous system just does its best. And for folks listening who are familiar with like fight or flight, freeze and appease, you can't see my air quotes, but trauma responses, like if you have a nervous system that has like a big reaction to something seemingly small, it might be that you have needed a really big reaction to keep yourself safe. So yeah, I think a lot of us used to think about trauma as like being in a war or being in a car accident or something that seemed really big in a certain way. And I think now we know that a lot of things can be experienced by the nervous system as traumatic for a myriad of reasons. But often there's some core facets that I think across the board, it's often a choiceless choice, no agency, no consent, overwhelming stimulus, not having a lot of power, having limited choice. And I think another misconception is that trauma and traumatic experiences are like, it's always in someone's history. And probably this is not news to a lot of your folks who are tuning in, but it's also an ongoing experience for a lot of folks. So post-traumatic stress disorder, the post part doesn't exist for all people. So trauma can be really inherent and insidious to the world we live in and the systems we live in.
What I appreciate about a trauma-informed approach or about trauma-informed care is the way that it really tends to the moments when our nervous system is activated. And we don't necessarily have to know that we've experienced trauma or even believe that we've experienced trauma to tap into those moments where you're like, oh, I'm activated right now. Oh, I'm having this big response. Oh, I know I
logically, I think that here's what's happening, but in my body, something totally different is happening. And for me, the business has been a minefield of those kinds of experiences, right? Like, oh, I get an email from a client and I'm suddenly panicked. And then I go back the next day and I'm like, wait, this email is perfectly nice. What is happening here? And I'm like, oh, receiving feedback in that way is triggering to me for some reason. And I can kind of figure all of that out. And what I've found is that I've never like uncovered some, you know, email PTSD or something with my therapist, but I can recognize the trigger regardless. But I think a trauma-informed approach is so much about just understanding those moments of being triggered or activated, whether or not we're identifying like a specific trauma that we've experienced.
Yeah. I'm so glad you shared that for a lot of reasons. A, because it's relatable. I don't even have to open the email to be terrified of the email. I'm thinking about this because I have clients who come to me for like Safe and Sound Protocol, which is a nervous system healing acoustic intervention. Really, really lovely for post-trauma. And often people are worried nothing big enough has happened to them. Nothing traumatic enough has happened to them. And I think the brain often really wants a why to what's going on. And it makes sense, context and naming. But it makes me think too of like, a huge part of trauma-informed business and being, you know, trauma-informed and trauma-aware and trauma-sensitive, like we don't always get to know. Same as like you might not know the story behind being triggered with an email. Like we don't always get to know that with our clients.
Mm-hmm.
I think folks really struggle with that. And I really think we need to know less than we think we do to be trauma-informed. And we don't actually have to work with folks who are coming to us to process trauma, to be trauma-informed. It's another piece of that blueprint of like, can I put the glasses on where I can imagine into what someone might be experiencing? And like, can I hold that, but really gently so that I can see them as they're showing up? I think that's really a big piece of trauma-informed business and care. Like, can I hold that folks who are going to be visiting my website or coming to a session with me, like that they might need XYZ adaptations. And then I have this sort of menu that's available without presuming, but like, just, it's a bit of readiness and then trusting our clients or our customers, like trusting their timeline too, because I think a lot of our systems are really like trauma extractive, like tell me everything and then tell me your whole trauma history and story, and then I'll offer you service. And for folks working within certain systems, I know not everyone is able to eschew that, or like the systems are the systems. And yet I think like it's so trauma informed to be at someone's pace and just to kind of weave back, like when we're working with someone's pace and not demanding information or sensitive history, we can notice even as you're listening, like how different that is to a traumatic experience where folks do not have agency. We're saying, here's some agency, take your time. And we get to have boundaries around that within this period of time, take your time. Because we get to need stuff. We don't have to just have zero boundaries and be little mushy people. Just a little bit of mush, you know?
Yeah, I like being a little mushy, but not like a total puddle of mush.
Yeah. I am really unlearning like that being a practitioner and being a people pleaser are the same. People need, you know, they need a little bit of mush, but I think it needs a little bit of a container too. So some of us, we have to work on being a little more mushy and like flexible. And some of us have to learn like, oh, I get to have boundaries, and like people need me to have boundaries or need me to believe in what I'm saying. I think that helps a lot with trust and safety. But to be meta, like we might have had experiences where we didn't get to do that in our relationships. And so it, for us, maybe doesn't feel safe to hold the boundaries. It's like we have to be trauma-informed with ourselves in realizing like, oh, this is why that's hard for me to hold that boundary. Like it's not for my client to be my, you know, therapist. But if I can notice like, oh yeah, I'm kind of recreating some like dynamics of little Jess and her family, like, okay, when they name that, it's like, okay, then I can try to turn my ship around a little bit.
Something that has always resonated with me about your work is that you talk about how trauma-informed care is helpful for anyone with clients. because I know in your context and in many people's context as healers or somatic practitioners, we might think of that as a space where you're like, yeah, that's where I go to talk about my trauma and I'm glad it's trauma informed. But I make business and wellness podcasts with other people. And like those people are not coming to me to be like, let's talk about my trauma. But let me tell you, the trauma still comes. So part of what led me to do more research on trauma-informed business practices is that I noticed that my clients had some different patterns in how they would approach things. Like for some clients, they'd miss a deadline and totally disappear on me. And I had to be like, why? Like, I'm not telling them this is a bad thing. I'm asking them like, what would you like to do? I'm like providing a lot of agency, but they're still like ghosting me after this thing has happened. With other clients, there's like this tendency to over-communicate, always like sending me so much information I already have, or like, you know, I just noticed these patterns. And at first I was like, oh, it must be me. Like, it must be my systems are weird. I didn't do something. I was like, oh, okay, no. This is all about the clients and their experiences. And I think especially because I make podcasts and I work with people for the long term, I really do have to learn like for each one, like, okay, what are the things that are really going to activate you in some way? What's going to really work for you? And how can I adapt to that within my own systems and processes? So I'm also not just people pleasing every client and ruining my own life in the process.
Yeah, with love. I think it's hysterical to hear you just already like step one, let's internalize.
Oh, 100%.
Like already talking about, okay, I must be the problem. The healing journey and the business journey are not that different.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think the relational and attachment piece I'm really swimming around in lately, in that things don't have to be inherently like re-traumatizing to bring stuff up. In fact, I found offering a relatively safe container. I never can promise a safe container. That's so relative. But offering like a relatively trauma-informed, intending to be like a safe and warm and soft space, that can bring up a lot for people. Being in connection and being in conflict while being in connection can bring up a lot for people. Maybe that wasn't possible in the past. Visibility. I think there are so many ties between where we are asking clients or clients are wanting to do things that maybe in the past have been paired with not safe. Is it safe to be seen? Is it safe to be in relationship with someone new? Is it safe to disappoint someone? Is it safe to overshare? Like, I think there's a lot of relational testing of the waters and ghosting too. Like, that makes sense to me. And this is why I think too, like, we don't have to be doing explicit work on trauma for these survival responses will come up, because often on some level, what might be happening is for us, for clients, whoever, we have this threat response of like, I don't know if this is safe. And it might not be proportional to like, I'm late for the deadline. It might feel too big for that. But I always like to say it's the right size for something. Like maybe in the past, disappointing someone wasn't safe or can't be safe within connection. So I'm not going to have any connection. Can't be myself within connection. So I'm going to have connections, but not really get to be there. There's so much negotiation that happens. So a lot of this comes up, even if it's not allegedly why folks are coming to you or they're not naming with it. And I just want to say one other piece on that I'm not into this fuckery of like doing an archaeological dig into someone's stuff if that's not what they're there for. So I just want to be really clear. Like, I'm not like, don't do that. People hate that. And if they've been through trauma, their neuroception and their hypervigilance is so smart. Like, let's not do that. But we can hold that, like, we can hold this wondering of like, I wonder if they felt safe enough to be able to be disappointed with me or whatever it is. And it doesn't always mean we're talking about it, or it's what's happening in our coaching call or whatever, but it just might be part of the fabric and part of the ingredients. And this is what's so wild about being in this space of offering trauma-informed care. For me, I think the lines are really thin sometimes, because I don't want to be like perpetuating that we're like projecting on clients or asking them to go somewhere they don't want to go. But for us to be able to like go through this process of something's up, maybe it's my systems, maybe it's not, maybe it's my client. Like we just have a little more in our Rolodex to sift through until we land somewhere.
Part of my discovery of this was that I was noticing behavioral patterns in my clients. But what I was learning in the business world was that, well, if you design your systems well enough, then they should be able to hold kind of any type of person. Any person should have the experience you want them to have within your business. And what I think was so refreshing about a more trauma-informed approach was it really just kind of eschews that sense of like, no, not every person is going to have the same experience of your business because you have created your quote unquote perfect systems. And it's exactly that Rolodex you're speaking to. It's like, what I can do is build systems that I believe are soft and supportive. And then as my clients are navigating them, I have more tools to be even more supportive when I notice different reactions. I can respond differently if I see something happening. And none of that is about me being like, oh, so-and-so is traumatized, better go deal with their like fawn response or whatever. You know, that's not what I'm doing. It's just like, we're emphasizing the care part of trauma-informed care. And I just think there are so few places in business where care is at the center of it. And that's really what drew me to these types of approaches.
Yeah, it's interesting for this one-size-fits-all piece because, yeah, there's not going to be an across-the-board solution. And also, I don't think any of us are really for everyone. So another paradox of trauma-informed care. I mean, I love adaptations. I love accessibility. I love inclusivity. And there are limits to that. And I think because I feel like I don't want to just be philosophical, I want to give people some things that they can chew on in a more direct way too. And one of them can be to think about like your limits, your scope of practice, who you serve. And not in a like, my gal is 32 and shops at Lululemon or like Baggu or whatever. Sorry to any Baggu lovers. But yeah, we get to like be thoughtful in who we're for, who our trauma-informed care and business is for and who it's not for. And that I believe is the kindness. And so that can show up like in specificity in our marketing and in having a menu that's not like Moby Dick sized, like it has to be doable or else we can't do it, right? So it's like, yes, let's be super, super expansive. And where are the stops? It makes me think, I had a craniosacral, biodynamic craniosacral therapy teacher. And for folks who don't know, this is a very like floaty, dreamy kind of bodywork approach. It's not needy and glidey like spa or Swedish massage. It's a little in the dreamy blue space. And this teacher would say to clients when there were 5 minutes left in the session, he would always say, take all the time you need in these next 5 minutes. And I feel like that's something we could bring into some of our businesses. Like there can be so much freedom within a parameter. And I think for us, we can experience more safety when we know what's possible and we know the boundaries. And the other little like gem that's related to this is like when we say like, well, what do you need? Anything you need? Like probably you might have experienced this. I know I've experienced this. If I'm like doing an application or an intake and people are like, what do you need? I'm like, I don't even know what you're offering or like who you are or what you're doing. So sometimes it like feels exclusive, but it's actually so kind to be really clear and transparent about like, here's the menu. What is it that you need? Or here's what I offer. And then internally, our prospective folks can be like, oh, yeah, that sounds like my cup of tea, or like, I need to look elsewhere. So take all the time you need in the next 5 minutes. Like, what's your 5 minutes? I like to think about that often.
Hey there, lovely Off the Grid listener. We're taking a quick break from the episode because I want to make sure that you know that you can now become an Off the Grid sponsor and share your work during a mid-roll ad like this or in a pre-roll ad before every episode on our feed.
In the past seasons of the show, I've shared some of my favorite affiliate partners. If you've heard the Flowdesk ad, you know what that's all about. But starting in season 3, I've decided to partner with listeners like you to showcase your work and the amazing, inspiring things that you're creating and sharing with the world. There are so many fun ways to sponsor an episode or a week of the show and to share your work with our amazing community of small business owners and creatives all over the US and abroad. If you'd like to hear your work shared by me and featured in a spot like this, you can head to the show notes to learn more about our ad opportunities. Whether or not you decide to sponsor an episode, I'm so grateful that you listened to the show, and I hope that you'll check out some of our partners this season. They have amazing free and paid offerings for you, and make sure you click through when you hear them. Okay, enough about our sponsorship opportunities. Let's go ahead and dive back into this conversation. So what I'm really hearing and what you're sharing is different places where we can invite in a trauma-informed approach through really bringing in the both and, like, finding ways to be both expansive and contained. And I love that you gave us a few examples of different places we can embed that in our businesses. I'm wondering if you could share any other places in business that you find it's really supportive to bring a more trauma-informed approach, or if you wanted to expand on any of those instances of marketing, of space holding in sessions or courses, of intake processes. Just again, thinking for those folks who are like, okay, cool, but like, how do I apply this? Like, where are we going to apply this work in our businesses?
Yes. Okay. When we think about both and, we can think about what works both for us and our clients. To be more specific, I meet with folks on Zoom, for example, virtually, maybe in a group, maybe I'm teaching. I want them to have a lot of permission around how they show up. Typically, for me, this will mean like cameras off or on, using the chat or using your voice, taking breaks whenever you need to take a break. Positioning your camera however you want, blah, blah, blah. That's amazing. And that's can be the both part. And then there might be this and part of like, can you notice in your own nervous system what it's like for you to hold space when all the cameras are off? And it might be fine for you. It might be that the both gets a little more, you know, if we're thinking of a Venn diagram, that it's not really a Venn and the both gets all the space and it's more important. Folks can show up that way and you just keep doing your self-tending while you're like, is anyone there? Hello. But I find this can be like a really great compass point for us. And I'm continually learning this and it changes. Like in this exact example, I won't go into the specifics, but I'm noticing I'm having some changing needs around how I'm holding space virtually. And I also know I have other practitioner friends where we have really different needs. And it's fine because if I'm going to say, sure, come and your cameras can be on or off or whatever, then folks who are okay with that for their nervous system experience will want to be in that space. A colleague of mine needs cameras on all the time. Maybe that's supportive for someone else's nervous system. So like that's one piece. And I think the other piece that can be helpful for folks is that now our client or customer like relationship and journey starts before we even are in the Zoom room or in the session or in the gathering, right? Should it? I don't know, but it does. So I like to think about having like a trauma-informed thread that's threading through all of my work. But if we're thinking about, you know, holding space for clients and being transparent and having containment and having coherence, a lot of us, I think to do that when we're in a session. And then we might not think about like, what is it like for a client, for example, if they're on an intake form or application form, and we ask the question that a lot of people ask, how committed are you financially to this when we haven't told them how much it costs? Or like asking a really big question about trauma history with a little asterisk next to it so they have to answer like before we've had any time to connect as humans. I don't mean to be shamey. I just think a lot of us have learned from business, but not really trauma-informed business ways. And that's a different blueprint. But when we think about that we're really like cultivating and fostering this relationship, even through like the client journey and the funnel. But it's like, okay, let's back up. How can we make even our website more trauma informed? What's the accessibility like there? And yeah, I don't know if that's even specific enough, because I think it kind of comes back to like, who is this for? Who isn't this for? And what am I doing? And just being so clear that hopefully there's not a switcheroo when people come to see us. It's like what you see is what you get, to the extent that that's possible.
I feel like a big part of the foundation of all of this is self-reflection and learning what you need to be able to show up in your business, you know, in my words, like with energetic sovereignty, and that you have to start there. Like a trauma-informed approach has to bring you to the table in your like fullness of your honest needs and begin with that. And then what I'm hearing you say is like a lot of it is just being really clear about that so people can make their own informed decisions about whether or not that's right for them. And we're also doing this all the time, right? Like when I go to sign up for a group program, I'm looking like, are they live calls? Is it asynchronous? Is it all pre-recorded? All of that has to do with like, what do I prefer and what is supportive to me? And hopefully the person offering that group program or whatever it is has also thought about that for them, because there's nothing worse than to be in the middle of a program and realize that like the instructor, the leader, guy, facilitator is like totally flaming out and having an awful experience because of how they designed it. And you're kind of like, like, if you didn't want this, that's fine. Like, I don't. So a lot of it is about bringing ourselves and our fullness to the business and being able to know and learn these things and reflect on them and adapt over time. And I can just share, like, for me, transparency is hugely important. Like, just to talk about pricing, because you brought it up and it really is like a huge red flag for me. I understand that it's a sales technique to not include pricing on your website. And I hear the people who are like, I don't want people to count themselves out of this price before they've actually talked to me about how supportive this could be for them. And for me, it's always a hard no. I will not apply for a program that doesn't have a price or at the very least a range. I understand if you're custom quoting your work, like, give me a ballpark and we'll talk and then we'll go into it. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. But if I have no reference point for the price, I feel panicked and stressed and activated. And like, I'm just not willing to do that.
Yep.
Other people don't care. Other people are like, whatever, we'll see what it costs. Like, that's not activating to them. But for me, it's really a challenging experience. And as a result, all of the prices for my business are on my website. I think I share that to say, it's not meant to be a critique of what anyone else is doing, but it's a way that I've learned. Like when I looked at that on other people's sites, I noticed how I felt. And then I didn't replicate that in my own business. And that isn't a good fit for some people, you know, and that's okay. There are a ton of podcast studios out there with no pricing on their websites, but Softer Sounds is not one of them, because one of the ways that I am being trauma informed on my website, like you were talking about, is by providing pricing.
Yeah.
To me, that's trauma informed. For other people, that's not where they are weaving in that thread.
Yeah. Well, I'm not as nice as you. I mean, I'm pretty nice. You know what, though? I think there's this question I've realized lately-ish that to figure out if something is trauma informed, we ask why. And like you just demonstrated this beautifully. So I would say for folks who don't have prices on their website, just to use this as the example, I might just gently, because I am nice, ask someone, I wonder why you're doing it that way. Because usually it'll point to an outdated marketing system and maybe a need, maybe often like a belief. But I have found, especially for folks who, like you, might have an icky feeling and not be sure why the icky feeling is there, sometimes we can ask, well, why do I think that they're doing it this way? And I notice like folks who offer accessible payment plans, but it's an expiring bonus. I'm like, well, why? I could imagine why. Sometimes we work within capitalism and we need the money really fast. But we can be thinking about like, what need is it meeting for me? And we're back to the Venn, like, what is it like for our clients? And are we able to find a different way to meet the need? Like, it's a lot of creative problem solving and trauma-informed care in business. And again, like, it's fucking hard. just, it's really hard within the systems that we work within. But yeah, I like to ask that question, even as folks might be like listening to try to discern some to-dos for their business. Yeah, you might ask the why question and also just how it lands for you. Because yeah, to your point, like people can tell when it's not working for us. And like, we're taught to do that, like to chase the money and chase the customers. And like, I get it. But yeah, it's not super sustainable if we're not able to really fully be there, which I think like we're taught to abandon ourselves in life and business and trauma and all kinds of things. Like, so yeah, I really do love this part of my work where it's like, can we challenge a little bit this idea that serving is the same as showing up totally goopy and selfless and whatever you need, because that's actually not sustainable for anybody. And bless our hearts, bless our like helpful little hearts. And yeah, we can shore up having that, as you said, that both and of like softness and what's the container for it. And just trying our best to find a container that works for us and the people who we work with.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the other end of that spectrum, other swing of that pendulum, it's like serving people is also not telling them exactly what they need and manipulatively convincing them that your way of doing it is the one that will resolve everything for them, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
It's neither of those. So no. That is where trauma-informed business is a practice, not a protocol. There's no like 10-step checklist where it's like, great, put all these things on your website and your business is now trauma-informed. I'm sure you can buy that out there. I'm sure people will sell you that. But like, I just don't believe that is what it means.
Yeah. And I think also to what you were talking about earlier, like, oh my gosh, what a fucking relief it would be if we could just like do this one overhaul and it would work for everybody. I think bless the part of us that wants that. And like, no, sadly, it's more work than that. But like, it's not a requirement that we're perfect at it. If we can let go of trying to be perfect, then we can just be imperfectly grappling with these things, which, I mean, I teach this and I always am. It's just how it works.
Since this is a podcast about running a business with no or minimal social media presence, I feel like I would be remiss to not ask you about social media in relationship to our nervous systems and in relationship to like a trauma-informed approach to our marketing. How do you approach social media platforms and social media marketing in the context of your work?
Yeah, that's a sticky one. It's a system which is inherently, you know, capitalistic and extractive. And we've talked a little bit about pace as it relates to trauma experience. The pace of social media is so different to the pace that probably a lot of us long for, but don't always get to live within or like abide by, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also, because of the like social media and algorithm machine, to be on there as a business, I think asks for a lot of content, especially in order to have the visibility and reach that you might need. And again, like I know a lot of folks who are like, just post once a week and have a blog. And maybe that's true. There are different schools of thought. But I think it's another sticky one where I think about this a lot because I do post kind of a lot sometimes. And I grapple with that. Like, is that trauma informed? Just from like a pacing, and is it helpful to our brains to just be full, full, full of content? And maybe I'm making excuses for the way I show up on social media, but I feel like I worry less about that. And what I'm more excited to talk about, but hate that happens, is that I think folks are often trying to elicit a nervous system response in order to make a sale on social media and in business. Like folks who might leverage their trauma history and leverage the parasocial relationship to foster more intimacy that doesn't really exist so that other folks work with them. Or like, just because someone makes a really good meme, does that really mean that they're the right person for you to work with? Like, I think, I don't know. I think we need a lot of discernment. And I guess what I would worry about the most, and what I try not to do, is I I don't know. I've been accused of not being like salesy enough and like swaddling people through my words. And maybe I definitely am better about being trauma informed than being a profitable business. But I think some of the power dynamics are just not amazing on social media. And I think there's a lot of folks who are really vulnerable who end up in these like extractive power over kind of culty relationships or giving a lot of power away. There's a story I often tell about a queer radical healer that I worked with who would say like each time someone would come in to see them, they would like throw the ball of their power and agency at this practitioner. And the practitioner was like, my job is just to keep tossing the ball back. So those of us who are on social media, I think to some extent, it's a compromise in terms of like, is my pace nervous system centered? I don't know if it can be in order for me to reach the numbers I need to survive, but can I be trying really hard not to be engaging in like the pain point stuff that's happening or overpromising? Can I very much be trying to give folks, just like we talked about earlier, like what's all the information they need to be able to be a yes or a no to following me, to working with me, rather than like not thinking about that and just doing whatever flashy or like triggering or activating thing can be required to make a sale.
Yeah, what I'm hearing you say is that just like there is a tension inherent to the phrase trauma-informed business, there's going to be a tension to any sense of like a trauma-informed social media due to the pace of these platforms, due to their values and to what is seemingly required there. And I'm also hearing you offer that perhaps if we are on social media, we can always be recentering in this sense of our job as a business owner who is selling something is to help people stay in their own agency and discernment, as opposed to putting them in the place of their pain or trauma in order to make the sale. I'm sure I've talked about pain point marketing on this show. I'm not sure it's always bad. Like, I think it's helpful to help people see where they're hurting. But then the purpose of the sales page to me is to move them from that place back into their place of agency so that they can make a decision not from that hurting place, but from their most sovereign place. And I think it's very hard to do that on social media. You don't really get the time to take people on that journey. And so making sure that you're doing that somewhere in your marketing, or that all of your social media posts aren't just like, isn't this hard for you? Isn't this hard? Doesn't that suck? Didn't this really ruin your life? Let me sell you this. Like that, where we just stay in the pain the whole time. Like there has to be a transformation, even in our marketing, even in our sales. And I love this idea just as a guiding question of like, how can our sales process help people access as much agency as they can muster to decide if this is right for them?
Yeah, that's so beautifully said. And that folks ultimately are getting to choose that. It's interesting too to think about, we're limited on social media. And I also think some of us could be a lot more trauma-informed on social media rather than just saying, it's a limited caption. There's no space for nuance. And sometimes I feel that way. Let me just say, Amelia, sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, I know I can't quite be nuanced enough, but at least we can name that. I think it's a really interesting container for sales, for writing, for connecting, because yeah, it is limited. It's not a session. Not everyone there is our client. And I just think it's not very trauma-informed to decide that we have no agency to bring any trauma-informed care or business practices into it. I mean, not that I'm perfect at it or anyone is perfect at it, but for me, it's another piece of trying to be trauma-informed in my marketing and also survive within capitalism. It's like a constant dance. But yeah, and do folks get to decide? Like, I like to talk in my trainings about like on-ramps and off-ramps and giving folks like, oh, I want to come and hang out. Oh, actually, I want to dip out, or, you know, so are we doing that rather than being super like prescriptive or blaming everyone for their problems or just telling them it's a mindset issue or.
And I think this is where you started, but just to kind of end us here as well, if you choose to be on social media in your business and you want to do it in a trauma-informed way, then you are also choosing to build in the self-tending and nervous system regulation that's going to be necessary for you to show up in that way on a platform or platforms that are inherently working against you. Because I do believe that. I think Meta and ByteDance, who owns TikTok, like they are working against our nervous system regulation and how they design the platforms. So if you are choosing to show up on them, it's not that I think you can't bring your trauma-informed or more regulated approach, but you also are going to have to build in the space for that tending and that care that you're going to need to keep trying to show up in that way.
Totally. And it's going to be outside of an extractive and like money monster system. Yeah.
Well, Jess, thank you for this super nuanced, supportive conversation. Folks who are listening when this comes out might realize by this point that you are also a sponsor on the podcast this month and that you are currently enrolling for your foundation's program. So I wanted to ask if you could share a little bit more about that with us and with anyone who might be interested in learning from you more ways to bring trauma-informed care to their business and their work.
Yeah, I would love to. So foundations, typically it's a 5-week program for me, and to be more accessible to folks, we are doing a weekend training in May. It'll be the 17th, 18th, and 19th. So Friday through a Sunday from 4 to 8 p.m. EST. And if that sounds like a lot of hours on Zoom, just know my trainings are annoyingly spacious. People struggle sometimes with the pace being slow. There's some nervous system learning we can do when we notice like what is the right pace for us. But it's a super permissive and like open space where you can come hang out and learn with us live. And we really will be going through the arc of trauma-informed care of like, what's a traumatic experience and what does trauma-informed care mean in the world we live in and with the clients we have and in this, you know, sticky web of proximity and privilege and not privilege. And we'll be taking kind of a look at this thread of how to be trauma-informed before we're seeing clients. Some of the stuff we talked about today, like pricing and marketing and intake, and is intake strictly for before we see clients? Spoiler alert, no. And then we'll get into some like during clients and customer sessions and workshops kind of stuff. And then we move to closing with clients. So there's a lot of juicy stuff in there around like boundaries and scope of practice. And we'll be mapping our nervous systems. And it's not a prescriptive place. Just like if we're thinking about trauma-informed care, and I'm thinking like maybe everyone has their little blueprint or map. We'll be just filling in some of that blueprint or map. And the other thing to say is that it's live, but you don't have to come live. It's recorded. And there's a whole curriculum that lives in a portal too. So for my chronic pain spoonie folks or whatever time zone you're in, it's meant to be something you can return to when you need it, whether you can join us live or not. And it's always a great group of like folks in healing and beyond.
I will be there this May.
I'm so excited.
I'm really excited too. So I'll just invite listeners to head to the show notes to learn more about Jess's work and learn more about foundations. And maybe I will see you in the course this spring, or if you're listening from the future, still check it out. You can hop on a waitlist or a newsletter or whatever it might be then. And Jess, I just want to say thank you so much for joining me and for sharing so much of your wisdom with us. I feel super regulated after this conversation and just ready to go like rest and then return to work in my business. So thank you.
Yay. I love that. Because I forgot to say that like, that's one of my hugest hopes in all of my work with business folks like you and in foundations is like, do we get to show up to the spaces we're trying to cultivate for people that can be nourishing of our nervous system? So yeah, I do too. I feel really energized. And previously I was feeling really fussy about being alive on planet Earth. So thanks for for hanging out and chatting.
Thank you, listeners, for joining us as well. And until next time, we'll see you off the grid and on the interweb.
Thanks for listening to Off the Grid. Don't forget to grab your free Leaving Social Media Toolkit at offthegrid.fun/toolkit. This podcast is a Softer Sounds production. Our music is by Melissa Caitlin Carter of Making Audio Magic, and our logo is by Natelier Studio. I'm your host, Amelia Ruby, and until next time, I'll see you off the grid and on the interweb.
Let's go off the grid.
Okay.
Let's go off the grid.
Okay.
I know that you really